This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to Metamode Kings Meadow, the show that follows the fantastic Chelsea FC women's team. After a frustrating FA Cup semi-final defeat to Manchester United, which included some shocking refereeing decisions, you could imagine the shock running around Kings Meadow when the referee showed a 4th-minute red card to Aston Villa goalkeeper Anna Leap for a remarkable save from Serkan Muskan, which just happened to be outside the box. The correct decision altered this match. Villa lost Ebony Salmon, to bring on third-choice goalkeeper Sophia Paul. Switching another attacking threat, Rachel Daly, to fullback. This put Chelsea firmly in control, and although Paul was rarely tested, Aggie Beaver-Jones calmed the nerves in the stadium, with a smart finish. And when Maika Hermano scored her first Chelsea goal, the Blues were 2-0 up and cruising. It was clear the team wanted to use this as an opportunity to boost goal difference in the title race against Manchester City, but had to settle for just one more through Kadisha Buchanan in the second half. However, with a trip to Barcelona on the horizon and a much-changed team, I don't think we can have too many complaints about the performance or result that keeps us top of the WSL. And the title of tonight's show, Went to Mode Kings Meadow, episode number 132, is Heroes and Villains. And that was a shocking introduction because my handwriting is shocking and I was reading that out. And luckily, it's not just me hosting. No Dane or Jane this week, but I am joined, thankfully, by Mr. Matt Ball. Matt, good to see you, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, it's good to be on. It's obviously good to be on with, well, just yourself at the moment, because everyone else has decided to be off somewhere else on their Friday night, but obviously us two got nothing else to do.
Yeah, nothing.
A wonderful pod for everyone else.
It was supposed to be you and Simon, which obviously was the damned United. So I was a bit worried about this game, and then he said he couldn't make it because of his daughter's football training, so I was a bit... more relaxed ahead of Aston Villa at Kings Meadow. Now, remember, you can listen to the show live when we record, which is normally Tuesday and Fridays at 8 p.m.-ish, by heading to mixlr.com, search for Went to Mode Kings Meadow. And you can join in the show by posting on the live chat page, as Johnny has this evening already. Good to see you again, Johnny. Now, if you are listening back to the podcast on either Apple or Spotify, please make sure to leave a nice 5-star review because it makes us look good for no other reason than that. We're not in it for the fame, but we do like it. Now on the show tonight, in part one, we'll look back at the 3-0 win over Aston Villa. Then in part two, we're going to talk a bit about AKB given the news today, and then we're going to look ahead to the UEFA Women's Champions League semi-final first leg away against FC Barcelona. And we're going to do all that shortly after this. Let's I'll get straight into the lineup and the stats and all that jazz as usual. Lining up Chelsea in their 4-2-3-1 formation with Hannah Hampton in goal. Ashley Lawrence, Jess Carter, Khadija Buchanan, and Neve Charles as a back four. Sophie Ingle made a rare start alongside Jurgen Nuskan in midfield with Aggie Beaver-Jones. Frank Kirby and Micah Hamano supporting Kat Macario for her first Chelsea start. Emma Hayes made four subs on the night. Guru Wrighton on for Neve Charles in the 56th minute. Aaron Cooper on for Jess Carter in the 69th, along with Mayra Ramirez for Kat Macario. But then Johanna Ritten-Cameron replaced Aggie Beaver-Jones. In the 82nd minute, that left just Jusicira Muzovic, Ben Lewopoulos and Yves Perisse as your unused subs. Stats-wise, Chelsea was 62% possession to Aston Villa's 38, 21 shots to Aston Villa's 5, 7 on target to Villa's 1, 7 fouls to Villa's 10, and 13 corners to Aston Villa's 1, which I think came in the 82nd minute, their shot, and about the 88th minute for their corner. But, yeah, there we go. Matt Moore changes them, perhaps we expected definitely on the show as well, and starts from Macario and Damano. And a rare start for Sophie Ingle. So yeah, Chelsea more than you expected as well.
Yeah, I think there was you needed to make changes because after the two disappointing results in a row, you even for the team of high the team we've got now, you've got to make a statement and say right. So some of you are getting starts, some of you are sitting out. Whether it is we want you to rest or you girls ain't played very well at the moment, so we're going to see how other people can do. But it was probably a few more than I probably would have predicted because I find Emma doesn't make too many changes, but Emma being unpredictable once again, so can never predict it.
Yeah, well, I just look back at the notes from the last episode. We had 7 of the starting lineup. We thought Cuthbert would have started. I also had Cameron to start and Ramirez. I think James. I picked James actually up front, so I didn't think Macario would play. Would be fit enough to start a match. Hamana obviously comes and goes in moments when she can. And Fran we've seen off the bench, and of course we predicted her to start anyway. But there we go. And obviously it's obviously a polar opposite to the last weekend where we're talking about refereeing decisions not being made. This one obviously made very early on, and it really changes the outcome of the game. You know, fine margins decide these games. And it really sort of killed Aston Villa off from the 4th minute, didn't it? You know, they had to go into defensive mode, took off Salmon up front and put Daly at fullback, and then from there they didn't really look to challenge us at all, did they?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this Aston Villa team is the same team as it was last year. I don't think they've played particularly well this season. Who is to blame to that is up for debate. But yeah, I mean, I looked at the decision. I thought, are they going to not give it? Are they going to not give it? This is the test to see whether there is really something going on. But obviously, it was as I think a blind woman could have seen that decision. So yeah, correct decision. Well done. Little clap for the referees. They don't deserve it, but there you go. But yeah, it changed the game and it made it a game where you expect Chelsea to win the game anyway, but there was even more of an expectation to win this. And going down to 10 men so early on, it should be quite comfortable, and it wasn't the end, but I still think I'm worrying about goals at the moment, so I think we still could have probably scored another one or two.
Yeah, it wasn't for lack of trying. Although I would say, I was in the West Stand. I had no idea that the goalkeeper had touched it. I just thought it was going in. And then it went wide. And then we see the goalkeeper get sent off. It was like, well, she must have touched it. But as you say, you know, anyone could have given it apart from me from where I was. I had no idea that she'd even dive for the ball.
At least from the TV screens, it was clear as obvious. But
yeah, I think, to be fair, I was looking at the goal as Muskin had it, like just expecting the ball to go in the goal. It looked like it was going in. We were celebrating before it went wide, which makes us look pretty stupid. But there we go. Looking back, obviously, at the replay of it, clear and obvious, and the ref did give it, so well done to the ref. She was very popular in the first half, less in the second. We might talk about that as we go. And I suppose Matt, you know, the worry is when teams go down to 10, they put everyone behind the ball, then Chelsea can't break them down. And we've seen that before. Even with 11 players, Chelsea struggled to break the teams down. So that goal from Aggie Beaver-Jones and the great finish it was, it really helped to sell, I think, the team as well as the fans.
Yeah, I think it's been a bit of a topsy-turvy two games. And I think particularly with not just mistakes that we've made defensively and in midfield, but particularly chances that we should be putting away but don't put away. So I think Aggie kind of putting this chance away early and taking the pressure off us. Because I think if you, the longer that game went on, with especially with the last two games and all the pressure and the talk about Emma Hayes and Idaverl and all that other stuff, I think that pressure mounting would have been really heavy on the player's shoulders. But Aggie doing us all a favour and getting us 1-0 up quite early on.
Yeah, I suppose I was worried when I see the team sheet, like where it's Kirby, Hermano, Aggie and Kat, you know, four players that would have never played together. Obviously, one of them hardly plays in Hermano. Macario coming back from injury hasn't, I don't think, really played up front for us that much, leading the line on our first start. You know, although they've not been as good this year, they're not stupid. They've got some good players in the team. I was worried, and then with the red card, I thought maybe that would help them, and I think it did in the end, actually. But the goal, I think, was, you know, one of those moments where you're not worried about losing now because you've got that one goal, and you know that Villa aren't going to really, really challenge us. And then, sort of the moment Villa tried to step out, you know, when the game had gone on a bit more, Chelsea got a second, and it was Hermano, you know, snatching in on that left hand side, and it was a great moment for her. And you see how, you know, the teammates reacted to it. Reminded me a lot of Alfie Gilchrist scoring his first Chelsea goal in the way that the fans and the team celebrated with him.
Yeah, I think it's important to get that goal. It doesn't matter how good or basic the goal is. You just get that ball in the back of the net and then you can start going on. And that, again, it's that confidence that you just gain from that first goal. It's so important for players. And obviously, Hermano particularly, because she isn't getting much game time. It's very here and there. And the pressure to come in and do well with that pressure, just getting that goal. And it is still an important goal, because I think I was still looking at this team and thinking, the way we've played over the last two games, it wouldn't surprise me if we just went 1-1 in this game and Aston Villa just got something out of nothing. But making it 2-0, it calmed me down. That was the point when I was like, okay, this game's done and dusted. We just need to get as many goals as we can and have goal difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sticking on Hermano, you know, a rare opportunity for her. What did you make of her performance? Because I felt she looked like she lacked the physicality for the WSL. And I think she needs, obviously, to continue to develop. Obviously, Sarah Mannion, who plays right back for Villa, is a very good defender. And I just felt that she didn't really want to look to go behind at all, and she kept running the ball to feet. And that's maybe because she didn't want that physical challenge. And maybe that's why we've not seen her as much so far for Chelsea. Obviously, an incredible, talented, technical player. But I think maybe lacking that physicality that you need, that sort of you've seen Cameron develop over her first season at Chelsea.
Yeah, most definitely. I think she does quite obviously need another loan, whether that's in the WSL, whether that is elsewhere. But I think it needs to be somewhere where she is challenged physically, and you could see, I think it comes down to the confidence aspect. If you haven't played a lot of games and you're not that confident, are you going to kind of run in behind so much? Are you going to take them risks, or do you think, all right, if I get the ball to feet, I can use my technical ability to do something with it? And maybe to her, it's kind of an aspect of that's more of a safer option for her to have, rather than running in behind, not getting it, and then getting more criticism and lower in confidence. But I do think she needs a loan. Obviously, I think she only came back because of an injury, if I'm wrong. So I think it's unfortunate she had the injury and it's kind of hampered her season. But I think next season, a good plan needs to be made for her in terms of going out on loan and get her to continue to develop, because you can see there's something there. You just need to rough the edges at the moment.
Yeah, she was playing regularly and scoring regularly at Hammer being in Sweden before that shoulder injury, as you mentioned, coming back. And, she's not to put her down. I think it looked better in the second half when Wrighton came on as left back. And I'm going to talk about that because, someone overlapping allowed her to come inside. Whereas Neve doesn't really look to get round the back too often in her role at the back. I'll just bring in Johnny on Miklu's, very nice goals from Hermano and Buchanan, who scored their first respectively. It was really memorable and full of joy. Talking of Buchanan, obviously she's the one that gets the third goal, header from a corner. And I think deserved for her performance in this game, and especially after maybe taking a bit of criticism for the defeat at Man United for her role in especially the second goal for United.
Yeah, I mean, it's another one of them goals. It's as you said, pivotal. It's important. I mean, Buchanan, like a few players, took quite a lot of criticism after the United game. And you sometimes when you have that criticism, you need to come back and almost fire back with something like, right, this is what I've got, and this is how I'm gonna respond to the criticism. And I think scoring the goal in the way she did, great header. I think overall, obviously, the defence wasn't really challenged at all, so you can't really comment too much on her defensive performance. But overall, it's a good performance, and again, hopefully, this team just gets a bit more confidence going into one of the hardest games you could play all season.
Yeah, I think on the rare occasions Villa did try to break forward, I think Khedira and Jess both snuffed them out pretty quickly. Obviously, it's a lot easier when it's just one lone striker trying to hold the ball up. It's a bit easier, but they did their role defensively, I think, very well for the game. Even when Nuskin came on back into defence, so not when Jess went off, they kept Villa at bay. As I said, one shot in the game that happened in the 82nd minute, a good save from Hampton, a good performance from her, and obviously the goal coming from a Macario corner. Matt, her set pieces looked really good at United when she came on. Her first start for her as the number nine. What did you make of her performance as Chelsea's main striker?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was surprised and not surprised. I mean, I've almost been waiting for Macario to get a start because I think she's played quite a few now, kind of 30, 35 minutes. And the natural progression in terms of getting a player back is they start, have 60 minutes and come off, because you don't, or you bring them on at half time at least. But I think she did well. I don't, I think you can see she's not fully still up to scratch, and there are times where she comes in and out of the game a little bit. But with someone that's been out for 2 years, it's kind of a normality. You don't expect anything more. But I do see a lot of quality in her, and I think she's a player that breeds confidence. I mean, the example was when she was in the box and she was doing kick ups before she then flicked. I just thought the audacity just to do that, and that is almost how she is. And I think she's going to be a really exciting player to have. I don't know whether I would play her up front personally. I probably would like to see her maybe coming behind the striker, almost either as a attacking mid or as the second striker. I think when you've got Ramirez, and obviously depending on what happens with Sam in the future, and you've got Fischl to come back from injury as well, I think you've got enough main strikers there where I think she could really benefit from being the person that feeds off them strikers, especially if obviously we've got Fran out of contract. Nuskin plays every bloody position, so you don't know where she's going to be full term, and you don't know what the new manager is going to do. But I think playing her behind the striker, I think, would be a preferred position for me. But I think she had an overall good performance.
Yeah, I've been waiting to see her as the number nine, just because she wears it. I think you need to at least play there sometimes to make the number look good. Yeah, obviously, as I said earlier, I didn't expect her to start the game, just because she looked like she was running through treacle when she came on against United in terms of pace. But maybe that's her recovery is a bit up and down given that injury, and as you said, getting those minutes back is going to be good for her. Yeah, and I was thinking the same. What I would like to have with Ramirez maybe as a If we're playing a 4-4-2 or something like that, where she can drop a bin, be the 10, feed off Ramirez holding the ball up and stuff like that. I've been talking of Ramirez, obviously she came on for her. And again, I think this is where the ref turned from hero to villain, as the title of the show suggests. Not getting the decisions she probably should.
Honestly, I don't even blink or say anything anymore. It's just the same stuff, different day. It kind of reminds me a little bit of kind of drawing back to the men's game, Eden Hazard, the amount of times he'd get fouled, and sometimes you get a free kick, sometimes you wouldn't, sometimes you get a penalty, sometimes you wouldn't. And I think surely, my point from it, from being a former referee, is you're getting this criticism week in, week out that people like Myra Ramirez is not getting penalties. And surely when she gets tackled, you probably take a little look at it a bit more to see, is it a penalty? And normally, if anything, it goes the other way where Myra then starts getting penalties and maybe not penalties. But it just seems like for some reason or another, they don't want to give her penalties. And I get that she does try and keep on her feet and tries to play the ball, which you want your players to do. But I've always made the point, it doesn't matter whether the player's trying to stay up. If it's a penalty, it's a penalty. And this just encourages players to dive, unfortunately. And I don't want to say Myra Ramirez to start falling around on the floor and try and win them like that. But if it's not working the conventional way, then I don't blame her for doing that. It just is. It is what it is. I kind of expect that in kind of, say, Champions League, because it can be a little bit of that aspect where it's a bit dodgy with physicality and stuff like that. But I expect in WSL this to be something that gets sorted. And it's week in, week out now, so it's just, I haven't got much more breath to complain about this anymore.
Yeah, it's funny. She doesn't speak English, but we knew exactly what she was saying when she looked after the ref didn't give her. I think it was a free kick, this one, not the penalty, where she was brought down quite obviously, and nothing given. Yeah, that, as you say, you know, every week it's the same. She is strong, she is fast, but she is fouled. So it doesn't matter if she is on the ground, if she's standing up, you know, she's being fouled. It should be a free kick. And why the refs don't want to give her anything, I don't know. Maybe they think she should be stronger than that if she is so big and so fast that she shouldn't be going to ground when she gets kicked. But yeah, as you say, there's not much more we can say on why that is. I think the refs will look at it probably over the summer, if they sort of sit down and do anything like that. I don't know. Looking at key moments, key decisions, key players, because she needs that protection, I think, as well. Otherwise, she could start getting seriously injured.
And honestly, it gets to a point where a player just looks and goes, do I want to be here? I mean, Myra's probably got plenty of options. She could go elsewhere if she wanted to. If the league ain't going to protect players, then players ain't going to stay. Simple as that.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, at the game, Aston Villa were quite slow in taking goal kicks, free kicks, tried to slow the game down. You know, they were losing 3-0. Fans were getting quite impatient with the referee and the Aston Villa players, obviously wanting Chelsea to get a few more goals in this game, given that Villa had 10 players. But, you know, given the result, should the fans be sort of disappointed we didn't put Aston Villa to the sword a bit more?
To some extent, yes. I mean, I was kind of sitting there at 2-0. I was calm, but I was kind of like, I really want one more, because I look at City and at the moment, I was just looking at their recent. I was just on my phone looking at their recent results, and they're scoring. Well, they were at least scoring three or four goals a game. Up to when I think the last game was when we beat them. But I know they've got Arsenal, and I know that could be an aspect of they could drop points and goal difference could mean nothing. But I don't. I just think we look like a team that is not necessarily scoring as much goals as we should, but then we're also leaking goals, and that doesn't bode well for goal difference. I think we're talking about the kind of Carter Buchanan defence. I think that's a defence that every now and then is solid, but I don't think together that partnership of them two together, I just don't think works over a long period of time. I'm hoping that obviously, Millie can come back as soon as possible. Bjorn can come back as soon as possible, because I think not necessarily them two together. I think Jess can still come in and play next to Millie, or you can Bjorn and Jess, Bjorn and Buchanan. But I just think Buchanan and Jess as a partnership for me is not the one that should be there full time and doesn't work. And I think I am slightly worried that this could derail us completely, which would be a big shame for Emma's last season.
Yeah, it was interesting, actually. They shared a little moment together after Buchanan scored, and I hadn't seen that much from them before. You were talking about the other partnership. They played together, but I didn't ever see that sort of connection between the two of them until last night, actually. And I know that Vinicius is a big game player, and you know, Jess has been fantastic all season. So, obviously, Millie back in the squad for Chelsea. You want a bit further behind in their recovery, but yeah, that is a probably a discussion for a different day. I mean, I suppose, Matt, you know, looking at one hand, you're looking at the WSL table, you're thinking we need to, you know, boost the goal difference. On the other, you know, we've rested lots of key players. Key players have not had to play 90 minutes. You know, and those players are fully rested ahead of, you know, the game tomorrow, which is obviously the biggest of the season.
Yeah, I think that's the big positive point that I take, is that so many players have been rested. And it's an absolute gargantuan game tomorrow. There's no way to speak about it. I mean, it's probably the best team on the planet in the women's game, and it's going to be a tough one. We ridiculously lost the final against them. We then narrowly lost last year, and I think. I'm hoping third time lucky, but the way we're playing, I just don't have any confidence, if I'm honest.
No, but we will talk about Barca in part two. I just want to talk about, you know, talking of key players rested, you know, we finished with a back four of Lawrence, Nusken, Buchanan and Gurrighton. And Wrighton's the one I want to talk about quickly, because she did play left back. And I just thought, you know, when we're playing these teams with low blocks, that should be an option, you know, more often. You know, maybe if you've got someone like Lauren James ahead of her who can drift inside and cause the havoc that way, and then you've got Wrighton overlapping. It could be a bit of a devastating combination, especially when we come to play Bristol City in a couple of weeks' time, a team that are going to sit back and try and defend for their lives. We're going to need all the keys to unlock the door, and possibly, if we're looking at goal difference then, boosting it in what's probably our best chance to do that.
I mean, I think, especially in the aspect where Neves played so much football and barely got a rest. And I understand in against most bigger teams, Guro is not a left back, but she's played wing back for us plenty of times before. I don't see why you wouldn't potentially go to a back three. Perisay and Lawrence, I'm sure, can play wing back. You could even argue that if you want to be really attacking, I'm sure Ritter and Canary could also play wing back. I think she can get up and down the pitch quite well. Obviously, you'd have to kind of figure out where you want Lauren, because I think Lauren, as much as she's improved defensively, I don't think she's good enough. She's athletically good enough to be a wing back as such, bombing up and down. But I don't understand why Wright has not been used at least left wing back more often this season, because I think it would have helped Neve get a bit more of a rest, because I think she, as good as she's been this season, I do think she's last few weeks just dropped a notch, and that could just be because she's played so many games, and I do think she needs a rest, but we can't afford to rest her, because every game means something now. We must win every game, otherwise we've gone from 4-3-2. We could go to 1-0 by the end of it. But it is what it is. I mean, I agree with you. I think Bristol City, we need to put as many attacking players on the pitch as possible. And if that means right and a left back, whoever at right back, I don't mind, as long as it gives us goals.
Yeah, I just thought our best actual football came in, you know, that hot sort of half an hour when Brighton was on the pitch. You know, when you said wing backs, I'm sure one of the Stamford Bridge games, Cambridge played as a wing back, and I don't know which one it was. Might have been the Champions League. One of those games, they did play with full-backs for a bit. Obviously, Charles was still on the left because Charles plays all the time. But yeah, if we're going to look to attack, you know, that took to work against Aston Villa. I know they had 10 players, but
I just think it suits Wrighton as well, being more out on the wing compared to how she's been this season, kind of a bit more inside, and she doesn't look as comfortable there. But the wing back would suit her perfectly in terms of being on the wide.
Yeah, well, she won Player of the Season as player's wing back. You know, then we switched to this this formation and tucking inside. And I don't want to say she's been awful, but she hasn't been. You know, she hasn't reached those levels at all that we saw from her last season. You know, so the result does leave us level with Manchester City. We have a +2 goal difference on them. We've got Liverpool away, Bristol City at home, Tottenham away, and United away in the league. Of course, obviously, we've got Barcelona this weekend and next weekend as well. City have got West Ham at home, Bristol City away, Arsenal at home, and Aston Villa away. Based on that, Matt, who would you say is favourite for the title?
I've been quite negative the last few weeks, so I'm going to continue that aspect, and I do think City are favourites. I think, well, the benefit is at least we don't have to play the FA Cup final anymore, and that's a bit of a game we don't have to worry about. But, I mean, I'd like to see our West Ham do against City, because I think West Ham, they've been that team this season that they're not very good at all. But when it comes against the bigger teams, they seem to just be a lot more secure and tight. So if I don't even care if City win like 1-0, then I'm like, okay, that's not a lot of goals that they've scored. And again, we've got Bristol City, so hopefully we can pump a few goals through there and gain the goal difference a little bit. Obviously, it's just the thing that Liverpool are tough, and but I'm hoping that the Man United game will be a game where these players will look to redeem themselves, because losing to Mark Skinner's team is just unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at West Ham's results, they drew with United and beat Arsenal. Both of those were at home. Lost 3-0 away to Arsenal. Lost 5-0 away to Man United. 2-0 away to us. And they lost 2-0 at home to Man City. And Man City had a player sent off in the 71st minute. So perhaps doesn't, you know, provide much hope for that.
It's just a little bit of hope, because they did look quite, against us, even though it was 2-0, they did look quite secure. So it's just me hoping, but I'll probably turn it on and see it's 4-0 City or something, and then just all my hopes and dreams will be dashed in that moment.
Yeah, I think right now, based on the 4 games left, I would also put City as slight favourites. If we beat Liverpool, I would give the favourite tag back to us, because I think, you know, we'll both beat Bristol City with wins.
And I think it'd be an interesting thing. Would Man United really want to beat us to allow City to win the league?
Yeah, I mean, Tottenham would have just played the FA Cup final, so they will either be happy or sad. One of the two. Obviously would have put in a huge performance in the cup, then have to come again to play Chelsea. As for us, you know, at that stage we would have been rested from the Bristol City game, I think is the last one before that, on the 5th. So there's 12 days rest for Chelsea there, so I think we'll be fully fresh, ready to go. And then if we are going into United with needing a win to win the league, there's no way that Man United beat us at Old Trafford. I know you might have said that about the FA Cup semi-final, but I just don't see it happening.
I don't see it. I mean, with the Man United result, I said to my friend, I was like, a broken clock is right twice today, but I don't think it's going to be right twice in a row.
Yeah. Absolutely. And City's fixtures, I think they beat West Ham at home. I don't think that's a problem. Bristol City, they'll beat with ease. Arsenal, you know, I think that's the one we're sort of hoping that they drop points on.
I said to my mate, he's an Arsenal fan, I said, I'm not relying on Arsenal to do... As soon as I rely on Arsenal to do anything for us, they don't do anything. So I'm not even... That game's not even... not even something I want to rely on. That's why I'm just looking at the goal difference, saying let's do the thing that we've got in our own hands and score as many goals as possible.
Yeah, but actually, I think if they go to Villa away needing to win the league, that's a more difficult game for them than us is going to United, in my opinion.
Yeah, it depends on how Villa are, but really, you never know what they're going to get at the moment this season.
We all know that Carter Ward loves Emma Hayes. That's all, yeah, I'm saying.
That's true.
When she was on the touchline asking for a goalkeeper, obviously she let her know that Ann-Catherine Berger was leaving. Otherwise, she could have had her. But there we go. Villa seem to be able to produce great goalkeepers because Sophia Paul looked just as good as Anna Lee in this game. So we'll see about that. Obviously, City have got their own goalkeeping issues. I know Keating, I think, is fit to play against West Ham, but we'll see. Player of the match poll, because we always do it when we win. Ashley Lawrence was in there with 5%. Buchanan with 20, Hermano with 24. The winner, Matt, was Aggie Beaver-Jones and with 51%. And she seems to win every time I put her in the poll. I think she's just popular. But for me, there wasn't really a standout player in this game for Chelsea. And I don't think she was really involved that much apart from scoring.
Yeah, I think it was one of them things that no one really stood out on their own right. I think everyone had good moments, everyone had quiet moments, everyone had not so good moments. So I think it was hard to give it to one particular person. I think Aggie's a fan favourite, as you said, and bearing in mind she scored the first goal, I think that helps with people's minds, especially when it's a hard decision to make. I mean, give it to anyone. I wouldn't mind, really.
Yeah, she had a great run as well in the second half where she got into the box, then just lost control of the ball, I think I remember, unfortunately. And, you know, she's one of my favourite players because she is, you know, her first thought is to attack, which we love. And also, just finally, the mention, you know, a great moment was the 14th minute applause for Susie, who was, you know, a member of the Chelsea Women Supporters Group, who sadly passed away recently. She was a huge fan of Frank Kirby. There was a shirt and some flowers laid for her at the game. And everybody stood up and applauded for her. Even the Chelsea subs on the bench and mentioned, of course, on Sky. If you were watching on Sky, you would have seen that as well. So that was a great moment, of course. We're going to go for a break now. When we come back, we're going to look ahead to that match against Barcelona. Before we do that, a reminder that issue 11 of King Commander Chronicle is still available to buy. I only have 25 copies left in existence for you. I will have them at the Barcelona game next week. So if you're not going and you want to get one, you need to order it online as quick as possible. That is kingsmannerchronicle.bigcartel.com. I'll leave the link in the description box. Kingsmanner Chronicle, of course, is your Chelsea FC Women's fanzine, filled with fantastic writers such as Sophie, Simon, who are both on the show, Johnny, who's your Mixler tonight, Ricky Hammond, lots of others as well that I can't think of the top of my head, Clayton Bierman, etc. 36 pages full of content about Chelsea women. I'm sure you'll enjoy it if you buy it, so make sure you check it out. The link for that will be in the description box, and we'll be back after this short break.
Chidge.
JK! In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft. Inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across six devices. It's a bargain, JK. And best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. And where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/ChelseaFancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to Expo Kings Meadow. Time now for, well, before we do Barcelona, we're going to talk AKB. You know, Matt, a bit of a shock to me, you know, no fanfare, no farewell. Doesn't really sit right that Chelsea players this season seem to be leaving without, you know, much acknowledgement at all. But, you know, what a servant she's been, you know, a great Chelsea player. We're going to miss her at the club.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a strange one. Don't really understand it, because I think it's, I mean, like someone pointed out the new ownership, blah, blah, blah. But last season, there were some great tributes made to players that were leaving. So this is under the ownership. So I don't think that's the aspect of it. I don't know. Maybe there's something that we don't know behind the scenes. Obviously, she has been kind of frozen out the last 6-7 months. So if that, maybe there is just something behind the scenes that means that for one reason or another, she's not got a particular tribute. But I think the fans will do their tributes on their own, because she's been a fantastic servant for us. Of course, at the age of 33, she's not going to be maybe as quite as good as she once was. But I think it's the right thing to do to let her go to Gotham City, out of the league, most importantly. But obviously, we've got Hannah, we've got Nikki Burke coming back from her injury, and then you've got Mucevic as well here. So we've got plenty of goalkeepers here. So I think it's good for AKB to go out and go for a new challenge and play some football.
Yeah, as you say, you know, at that age, we're coming to the end of her career and to experience the NWSL, obviously a lot of players. And of course, you know, we've seen Hannah Hampson, you know, grasp the number one spot with two hands, and there's lots of competition here. Strange timing, but obviously the American League, I think, has just started. So that'll go on a lot longer than obviously our season will. But what surprised me, Matt, you know, she's been here 5 years, but just 65 appearances for Chelsea. But still, because there's been so many huge moments involving her, I think she does go down as a Chelsea legend.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think with this squad, we've won and done so much, so many amazing things, that you could make a point for every single player that's played in the last 3 or 4 years to be a Chelsea legend. And so right, because they've done things that have been phenomenal. We've almost done the Manchester City in this league and dominated it and made it our own. It's only this season that a few wheels seem to start falling off a little bit. But I think it's a credit not just to Emma, because obviously, of course, Emma's been the one that's cultivated it and made it. But these players have produced fantastic moments. And I still watch back the Leon moment, the penalty saves. And there's plenty of other moments AKB's had that everyone will go on to remember. So yeah, she's a Chelsea legend in my book, as most of the team has been.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, the personalities of the players have helped in that sense, and you know, her own personal, you know, story as well, as you know, a dear to the fans, you know, who supported her as she's come back from cancer, as well. You know, so I was going to ask you your favourite AKB moment. I'm guessing Leon Pipsit.
It's only because I always watch back, and I mean, I'm just behind the goal and I can see myself in the crowd celebrating. So it's always a moment I love to watch and go, oh, by the way, guys, it's me. But yeah, fantastic moment to watch kind of live at the bridge. And it will be a memory that I won't forget.
But my ego was bad. That's even worse. My favourite moment is the save she made at Man City when we went up there in the league. I think it was the second or third last game of the season, and we just had to not lose. She made that save from the header right at the end, tipped onto the bar, I think, and over. I think, you know, when we look back at that season review, we were saying that that was the moment we won the league, when she made that save. You know, always put her body in the way for Chelsea, always, you know, got hurt almost every game trying to stop the ball going in the net, and that's what you want from your goalkeeper. And, you know, I hope that Hannah's learnt from her when to sit down and take those tactical timeouts that, you know, AKB is also famous for, calling the physio on, probably when it's not needed so much, so Emma Hayes can get so much needed instructions over to the team. But of course, we will miss her, and the best of luck to her at Gotham in the NWSL. As Johnny's saying on Mixley, was shocked to hear it today. All very sudden, out of nowhere. Never forget last season's heroics. Of course, we won't forget any of her heroics over her time at Chelsea, a serial winner and a great goalkeeper as well. We're very lucky to have her. Moving on then to Barcelona tomorrow. It's at 12:30 PM UK time. A squad of 20 has travelled to Barcelona, Matt, including Millie Bright, who is apparently available to play in the game, according to the press. Do you think Emma Hayes is going to risk her for this, given your thoughts on the Buchanan and Carter partnership?
As much as I would like to see it, I think it's just there to give Barcelona a little bit to think about. Because as much as you think, no, she's not going to play, you know that you're almost going to be thinking, well, what if she does play? And it is just something to put in there on them. I don't think it's... I think it's a bit... what's the word to put it? Irresponsible just to throw Millie in like that. One, because the last thing we want is for her to get another injury for 6 months and then she's out for most of next season. Two, the confidence thing of if Millie's not, and she won't be at any sort of pure fitness level, and she concedes a goal, the pressure goes straight onto her and people start making ridiculous remarks. So I think it would just be best to keep her in the squad. It's good that she travels, and obviously doing the training itself, going and travelling, will build her fitness up herself. But I don't see her play. I mean, you never know what Emma does, but I think this is one I can quite safely predict won't happen.
Yeah, I think she's there more for, you know, moral support than physically going to be on the pitch running around. Time will tell, of course. We do never know of Emma Hayes. She is a known liar, as we point out on the show often. I don't see it myself, but, you know, as we say never until the team news is released. I wouldn't be surprised. But, you know, Matt, we showed, you know, last season we can stop Barcelona from playing. We can score against them. Obviously, they did just beat us 2-1. But we know, you know, it takes so much to do that. It's going to be a huge effort. And, you know, for me, there's a worry that this squad have given so much already. This is, you know, just a step that's going to be one step too far, you know, away to Barcelona. I think the fact that it's not at the new camp and it's, you know, a different stadium might be in our favour a little bit.
Maybe. I don't know. It's such a tough game. I am honestly going into it with pure fear, more than anything. I think if we were playing at our top form, and I think maybe a few months ago, if you asked me the same question, it'd be like, no, we're beating everyone, we're going to win it. Just the way we've played, I just don't have the faith that everyone's going to be on top form. I think you need everyone to be on top form for this game. There's no messing about. I hope I'm wrong, and I beg that I'm wrong. But I do think this is just going to be, as you said, a step too far for us at the moment in our current form.
Yeah, of course. You know, the key position, obviously, we're going to look at for Chelsea is the fullbacks. You know, Graham Hansen, Caldente, you know, Bateas, you know, these great attacking players that, especially Graham Hansen, who caused us that trouble last season at Stamford Bridge, and again in the new camp, that's going to be the key. Looking at, for me, it's given that Lawrence played the full game against Aston Villa, it's going to be Perisay and Charles at fullback.
Yeah, I think Charles, I don't mind. I think she's played arguably probably too many minutes for my liking. But she's finally, I suppose she is finally getting some rest now, I guess. But yeah, I mean, Eve, I really do like Eve Perisay, but I think she's had a few games now where she's not been the best. So I really hope she can sort herself out a little bit and be prepared for what is coming. Because I think, as you said, it is an onslaught of players at Barcelona having that position. And if you're not switched on, especially in the first minute, as we found out last time, you will get punished straight away.
Yeah, I'm just looking back at the team that started against Barcelona at Stamford Bridge. Perisay started at right back that day. We had centre-backs of Mielda and Eriksen, and then Jess Carter played at left-back with Neve ahead of her. We talked about Millie Bright. If Hayes is thinking that she's going to put her in, do you think she would match up that Carter and Charles partnership again, or we're past that stage now?
I think you've got to play. I just think, especially if Millie was fit, this would be maybe a debate, but I just think we've got to play to our strengths. We've got to play our best team. And I think Charles should be able to hopefully handle Hansen as much as we can. I mean, she has the ability and she has been one of our best players this season. So we've got to trust her to do it. I wouldn't try anything like that this time around. I think try and go with our strongest back four, which I guess will be Perisay, Carter, Buchanan and Charles. Do I have faith in it? Not completely, but it's the best we've got at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we are coming up against, the best team in women's football right now. Some great names, some great players. We're not, again, like we were last season, at full fitness in defence, but, Neve Charles is not the same player she was last season, and she's not the same player she was when we lost to them 4-0 in the cup final back in 2021. She has developed, she's come on lots, and, got the captaincy as well with Erin. So, we've got to, put faith in those players. And I suppose for me, Matt, the other key area when you're playing Barcelona, of course, men or women, is in midfield. They've got Kira Walsh, Bateas that sits in there, Bonmati. We normally go with the double pivot, but for me, we need one more in there with them in this game. And I think it's going to be, Xhaka Nuskin sitting on Kira Walsh here and trying to stop her from dictating Barca's play.
Yeah, I think the benefit of what we have with Nuskin is that her role can change throughout the game. And that will be something that I think Barcelona will be a bit apprehensive. I'm not going to go fully and say they're scared of it, but they'll be apprehensive. 1 minute she could be just sitting on Kira Walsh for 10, 15 minutes, blocking the game out, and then suddenly she can just pounce into that space, into that attacking role, and cause a bit of disruption further forward. She could literally sit and be a third centre-back if we really wanted to. She could do anything. So I think it's something that tactically, in a game like this, where you do need to be so tactically aware of what Barcelona are going to do, I think having someone like Nuskin that you can change the game within minutes, change the whole system, tactics within minutes, without even putting a person on, I think is great. And I think that midfield, I think, while defensively, I think we haven't been good enough in the last few games, I do think the midfield has been bypassed way too easily for my liking as well. And I always say, and it's a common thing with the Chelsea men a lot, players, defenders will make mistakes when they get put in positions where they could make any decision and that decision will be wrong, but it's because the midfield have put them in that position in the first place. And I think Cuthbert and Leupolz, I think while that is by far our best pivot, I think hasn't been as comfortable as I'd like it to. And I think, as you said, a third person in there will help solidify it a lot more.
Yeah, I hate double pivot midfields. I just don't like them at all. Even against Aston Villa, Ingle and Nuskin were playing together in midfield. I think the closest they were was during the team photo. Nuskin was basically playing up front and Ingle was playing in defence, and there was a huge hole in midfield, as we've seen many times with Chelsea, to be fair. Looking at the other end of the pitch then, Matt, you know, it's not all about Chelsea's trying to stop Barca. We've also got to use some of our own weapons. And I think that showed last season as well when Lauren James came on at half-time in the first leg and she played in the second leg. We were a much better team over those three halves of football than the half that she missed. And I think you want, for me, you want LJ going up against Lucy Bronze, who, despite being a great player, is ageing and maybe losing that yard of pace. I'd similarly put her with Kyle Walker from Man City. You know, one of those defenders who've been great but are slowly starting to fade. And then getting Ramirez up against their centre-halves, who I don't think are that great. And obviously Ramirez is going to be key for Chelsea to get up the pitch by holding on to the ball, you know, using her physicality and her strength. Is going to be key to how Chelsea, you know, attack this game.
I think she's also key because she knows Barcelona better than any other players do, in the fact that she's played against them for a long while. I think that could work the other way because I think they know exactly how Ramirez plays, but I do think we need to use Ramirez very well, a good focal point. And I think physically she should be able to, that is where we can get behind, we can get Barcelona rattled a little bit. Again, if you can pull the centre backs away and gravitate them towards Ramirez, that leaves Lucy Bronze, as you said, isolated against someone like Lauren James. And then you're right on the other side equally. If you start causing them problems in the back, that makes their midfield a little bit more apprehensive. They have to be sitting a bit more, which allows them to not be able to play out as much. And that's where I think you've got to strike a bit of, you've got to strike a bit of fear into this team, because a team that used to winning every match because their league is maybe not as good as anywhere else. I mean, way Real Madrid played against us, they were dreadful. And there's not really many other teams that are up to their level in the Spanish league. So this team isn't used to having fear into them. I think we need to strike fear into this Barcelona team if we really want to go on with this game and go and get a win. If we play feeble, if we play very naive and let Barcelona feel confident, then they're just going to play. They're going to play with us. They're going to toy with us, and they're going to win the game whenever they want to.
Yeah, and we saw, you know, we saw Brand give them a game in the quarterfinals, and no one was expecting that. They haven't really blown the Champions League, you know, teams apart like they did do, you know, one or two seasons ago. You know, and I think their defence can be got. Obviously, it would have been better if we had, you know, the likes of Sam Kerr available as well. But, you know, we go into this game as we are, you know, and obviously there's no away goals in the Champions League. So there's no pressure on us to score away. If we don't concede, of course, that is. So, Matt, are you expecting, you know, a back-to-the-wall, park-the-bus, or a defensive but counter-attacking Chelsea performance?
I do think that the minimum we need a good counter-attack. It's fine to play defensive, but if you're not, I think if we just sit back to play for a draw and not to score, I think we'll get picked off at some point. I think we need to have an effective counter-attack, and I think with the players we got, we do have a great counter-attack, because I think when you have threats like Ramirez, like Wrighton, like Lauren James, it again puts Barcelona into two minds. They can push up all they like, but they do have to think of what if. And if you can, especially all you need is early on, just that one swift counter-attack. It doesn't even have to come to a goal or anything, but it just puts that fear into the minds of Barcelona. Hang on, we've got to make sure we don't get caught out here. And that will destabilise Barcelona's play a little bit. And I do think there will be times where we need to sit back and play on the counter-attack, but I think there's also times where we need to press Barcelona and we need to play maybe a bit more riskier, play our game and try and put Barcelona under pressure. Because as you said, Brand gave them a good game. And I think, as you said, their defence can be got at. So let's take advantage of that and try and get out of their defence rather than allowing them to try and pick us off. But as you said, at the minimum, I think we just need to have a good counter-attack if we're going to play like that.
Yeah, I think we saw that on, you know, the game last season when LJ came on at half-time. Suddenly Chelsea had someone who could have the ball higher up the pitch with the ball at their feet. And I think they had to then think about what we could do going forward. And we did have, was it Wrighton had a great chance in that game?
Yeah.
That was, I think, was saved or blocked. And all of a sudden, it's not just a long ball to Sam Kerr that Barcelona have defending. You know, they're defending Chelsea with possession high up the pitch, where we can move up the pitch as well. So I think her performance, hopefully she's got a new hairstyle. That always seems to help her performance when she's playing a new look, a new Lauren James. You know, we need her to really step up in this game. As we do, of course, all the players. Now, before I give you my team, Matt, I'm going to read out Johnny's on Mixlr because he's put his team out there for me. He's gone a 4-2-3-1. Hannah Hampton in goal, Perisic, Jess Carter-Buchanan and Charles in defence. Aaron Cuthbert and Nusken in the midfield with Guru Wrighton, Lauren James and Camrid supporting Ramirez in attack. And he's predicting a 2-0 or a 2-1 win to Chelsea. My team features 10 of Johnny's players. The one I haven't picked is Guru Wrighton, and that is because I've got a 4-3-3 with Hampton in goal, Perisic, Carter, Buchanan and Charles. Cuthbert, Leupolz and Nusken, and then Camrid, Ramirez and James as the three up front. What's your thoughts? What would you be thinking to do going up against Barcelona away from home?
I think we're all on the same wavelength, at least with the back five. I think that kind of speaks for itself a little bit with people not being able to play, cut tight, well, not being selected, and injuries as well. But I do think, like you said, I think it's important to have a three in midfield. So I would play Nusken, Leupolz, Cuthbert in midfield. The only change I would make, I'd probably bring Wrighton in to start and maybe try and bring Canarid on as a sub if we need her instead. I just feel that might be a little bit more effective, and I think almost Canarid's kind of a lightning speed when she uses it on her acceleration. I think against a more tired, potentially Barcelona line might be just a little bit more effective. But if it's Canarid in for Wrighton, again, I don't mind either way.
Yeah, I've gone with Cameron because I think if we're trying to get up the pitch and we're playing the ball to Ramirez, we need to get there fast. And, you know, the only player in the team that can do that is Cameron. I would just worry about whatever side James is on in terms of Graham Hansen. Then we're leaving Need one-on-one if James is playing on the left. So perhaps, you know, Ryan will play there and James on the right, and then you could essentially have a 4-4-2. We've seen this season quite a lot with Chelsea playing 4-4-2 in a defensive situation. But I think if we want to stop Barca playing, you know, stopping Kira Walsh is obviously going to be vital to that.
Yeah.
And then you can match up the other two midfielders with Cuthbert and Leupolz, who, you know, as I said, every player in the team is going to have to produce an 8 or a 9 out of 10 performance for us just to get anything from the game. You know, we can't carry passengers, as we see. You know, they play like they did against Man United in the FA Cup. This, you know, is going to be
a long, long day.
It could be a long afternoon, and then a long week till the second leg, of course. And we want, you know, what we want more than anything is to be in the game. So when we get to Stamford Bridge, you know, we can try and help the team on in terms of atmosphere and, you know, chanting and singing to get, you know, hopefully us through to Bilbao, which is obviously going to be the dream farewell for Emma Hayes and for Chelsea. Prediction then, Matt. I'm just going to say I just want to shout out to Rich, who predicted Chelsea 3, Aston Villa 0. It is the first time anyone's ever predicted a correct result on Benzema King's Meadow with a terrible way. So Rich is 1-0 up. So yeah, pressure's on now to match Rich.
Do I be pessimistic? Do I be confident? I don't think I'm going to quite go as confident as Johnny, but I do think the game is going to be alive at Stamford Bridge. I think it's going to be 1-1.
1-1. No, I should have gone first. My score. My rules, you can't have the same score. I'm going to go 0-0 then. Because we don't need to score out there. And I think they'll be happy with 0-0 going back to Stamford Bridge and making it. You know, they want it to be a knockout game in the second leg where they're not having to score three goals or anything like that to get through. You know, the winner of the match is the winner of the tie, is what they'll be hoping for, I think. Looking forward to it. Should be a great game, a great occasion. I know lots of people out there supporting the team, so hopefully they get some noise going. We'll be back next Tuesday to look back at this game and then look ahead to the second leg. We'll be joined by Sophie Spittle and Rich Bates, who are both in Barcelona for the game, so be looking forward to hearing their experience from that. In the meantime, you can follow the show on social media. We are on Twitter at Mo Kings Meadow and on Instagram at Went to Mo Kings Meadow. I am at Dean Mears and Matt is at MattJBall98. If you like what we do, you want to help support the show, continue to do stuff like Mixler and edit the show and stuff like that, please consider to become a Patreon. £5 a month gets you ad-free access to all the podcasts. You get a free sticker. There's exclusive content on there and other stuff like that. So if you do like what we do, please consider signing up for that. The link will be in the description box. It's patreon.com/wetsmo. Kings Meadow. Matt, good to see you again. Thanks for not having a social life like me and talking about Chelsea on a Friday night.
Oh, yeah. It would have been a bit harder if you were doing this on your own.
It would, although I would agree with myself wholeheartedly the whole way through. To be fair, I could chat with Johnny through Mixler and try and make a show, but it is a lot easier when I've got a guest, so thank you for that.
No worries, a pleasure coming on.
Yeah, as I said, we'll be back next Tuesday. Until then, thanks for listening. From Kings Meadow till Bilbao, keep the blue flag flying. Bye.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.